Sleep room half-light, said Louis. Dim blue light filled the room. They floated a foot apart between the sleeping plates. In preparation for space, they had cleaned off the skin dyes and hair treatments of Flatland style. The hair in Louis's queue was now straight and black. His scalp was gray with stubble. Yellow-brown skin tones, brown eyes with no perceptible slant, changed his image considerably. The changes in Teela were equally drastic. Her hair was dark and wavy now, tied back from her face. Her skin was Nordic pale. Her oval face was dominated by big brown eyes and a small serious mouth. Her nose was almost unnoticeable. In the sleeping field, she floated like oil on water, utterly relaxed. But you've never been as far as the moon. She nodded. And I'm not the world's greatest lover. You told me that yourself. She nodded again. There was no reticence in Teela Brown. In 2 days and nights, she had not lied, nor shaded the truth, nor so much as dodged a question. Louis would have known. She had told him of her first two loves, the one who had lost interest in her after half a year, the other, a cousin who had been offered a chance to emigrate to Mount Lookatthat. Louis had told her little of his own experience, and she had seemed to accept his reticence. But she had none, and she asked the damnedest questions. "Then why me?" he asked. "I don't know," she confessed. "Could it be the charisma? You're a hero, you know." He was the only living man to have made first contact with an alien species. Would he ever live down the Trinnock episode? He made one more try. "Look, I know the world's greatest lover, friend of mine. It's his hobby. He writes books about it. He's got doctorates in physiology and psychology. For the past 130 years, he's been..." Teela had her hands over her ears. "Don't," she said, "don't. I just don't want you to get killed somewhere. You're too young." She wore the puzzled look, that puzzled look, the one that meant he'd used proper interworld words in a nonsense sequence. Whiplash of the heart? Killed somewhere? Louis sighed within himself. "Sleep room nodes merge," he said, "and something happened to the sleeper field. The two regions of stable equilibrium, the anomalies which kept Louis and Teela from falling out of the field, moved together and merged into one. Louis and Teela followed, sliding downhill until they bumped and clung. I really was sleepy, Louis, but never mind. Think about privacy before you drift away to dreamland. Spacecraft tend to be cramped. You mean we couldn't make love? Tonge, Louis, I don't care if they watch. They're aliens. I care." She gave him that puzzled look. "Suppose they weren't aliens, then would you object?" "Yes, unless we knew them very well. Does that make me out of date?" "A little." "Remember that friend I mentioned, the world's greatest lover? Well, he had a colleague," said Louis, "and she taught me some things he was teaching her. You need gravity for this," he added. "Sleep room field off." Wait returned. "You're trying to change the subject," said Teela. "Yes, I give up." "Okay, but just keep one thing in mind. One thing. Your puppeteer friend might have wanted 4 species instead of 3. You could just as easily be holding a Trinnock instead of me." Horrible thought. "Now, we do this in 3 stages, starting with straddle position." "What's straddle position?" "I'll show you." By morning, Louis was glad enough that they would be traveling together. When his doubts returned, it was too late. It had already been too late for some considerable time. The outsiders were traders in information. They bought high and they sold high, but what they bought once they sold again and again, for their trading ground was the entire galactic whorl. In the banks of human space, their credit was virtually unlimited. Presumably they had evolved in some cold, light moon of a gas giant, some world very like Nereid, Neptune's larger moon. Now they lived in the gaps between the stars, in city-sized ships whose sophistication varied enormously, from photon sails to engines theoretically impossible to human science. Where a planetary system held potential customers, and where such a system included a suitable world, the outsiders would lease space for trade centers, rest and recreation areas, supply dumps. 500,000 years ago, they had leased Nereid. "And that must be their major trade area," said Louis Wu. Down there. He pointed with one hand, keeping the other on the controls of the transport ship. Nereid was an icy, craggy plain beneath bright starlight. The sun was a fat white point giving off as much light as a full moon, and that light illuminated a maze of low walls. There were hemispherical buildings and a cluster of small thruster-driven ground-to-orbit ships with passenger sections open to space, but more than half the plain was covered with those low walls. Speaker to animals, hovering hugely between Louis, said, "I would like to know the purpose of the maze. Defense?" "Basking areas," said Louis. "The outsiders live on thermoelectricity. They lie with their heads in sunlight and their tails in shadow, and the temperature difference between the two sets up a current. The walls are to make more shadow border lines." Nessus had calmed down during the 10-hour flight. He trotted about the life system of the transport ship, inspecting this and that, poking a head and eye into corners, tossing comments and answers to questions over his shoulder. His pressure suit, a baggy balloon with padding over the hump that concealed his brain, looked light and comfortable. The air and food regenerator packages were improbably small. He had given them a strange moment just before takeoff. Music had played suddenly through the cabin, complex and lovely, rich in minor tones, like the sad call of a sex-maddened computer. Nessus whistled. With his twin mouths, rich in nerves and muscles appropriate to mouths which were also hands, the puppeteer was a walking orchestra. He had insisted that Louis fly the craft, and his confidence in Louis's ability was such that he had not strapped down. Louis suspected special secret gadgets to protect the passengers of the puppeteer-built ship. Speaker had come aboard with a 20-pound luggage case which, when opened, had held little more than a collapsed microwave oven for heating meat. That, and a haunch of raw something or other, of Kazinti rather than terrestrial origin. For some reason, Louis had expected the Kazin's pressure suit to look like bulky medieval armor. It didn't. It was a multiple balloon, transparent, with a monstrously heavy backpack and a fishbowl helmet packed with esoteric-looking tongue controls. Though it held no identifiable weapons, the backpack had a look of battle gear, and Nessus had insisted that he store it. The Kazin had spent most of the voyage napping, and now they all stood looking over Louis's shoulder. "I'll drop us next to the outsider ship," said Louis.
"No, take us east. We've been using an isolated area to park the long shot."
"What for? Would the outsiders spy on you?"
"No. The long shot uses fusion drives instead of thrusters. The heat of takeoffs and landings would disturb the outsiders."
"Why long shot?"
"It was so named by Beowulf Schaefer, the only sentient being ever to fly that ship. He took the only extant holographs of the core explosion. Is not long shot a gambler's term?"
"Maybe he didn't expect to come back. I'd better tell you, I've never flown anything with a fusion drive. My ship rides on reactionless thrusters, just like this one."
"You must learn," said Nessus.
"Wait," said Speaker to Animals. "I myself have had experience with fusion-driven spacecraft, therefore I will pilot the long shot."
"Impossible. The pilot's crash couch is designed to fit a human frame. The control panels follow human custom."
The Kazin made angry noises deep in his throat.
"There, Louis, ahead of us."
The long shot was a transparent bubble over 1,000 feet in diameter. As Louis guided their craft to circle the behemoth, he could find no cubic inch of her that was not packed with the green and bronze machinery of hyperspace shunt motors. Her hull was a General Products No. 4 hull, easily recognized by one familiar with spacecraft, so big that it was commonly used only to ship entire prefab colonies. But she didn't look like a spacecraft. She was the tremendous counterpart of some primitive orbital satellite, built by a race whose limited resources and limited technology required that every smallest bit of space be used.
"And where do we sit?" Louis inquired. "On top?"
"The cabin is underneath. Land beneath the curve of the hull."
Louis brought his ship down on dark ice, then slid her carefully forward under the bulging belly of the long shot. There were lights in the life system. They gleamed through the long shot's hull.
Louis saw two tiny rooms, the lower just big enough to hold a crash couch and a mass indicator and a horseshoe-shaped bank of instruments, the upper room no larger. He felt the Kazin move up behind him.
"Interesting," said the Kazin. "I presume that Louis is intended to ride in the lower compartment and we three in the upper."
"Yes. The fitting of three crash couches into so small a space gave us considerable difficulty. Each is equipped with a stasis field for maximum safety. Since we will ride in stasis, it matters little that there is no room to move about."